Welcome to Le Rendez-vous. My name is Garance Doré and I'm a writer with so many stories to tell and ideas to share that I created this special moment to talk about all the things that are going on in our lives. So come, let's spend a moment together. Le Rendez-vous is brought to you by Doré, the skincare line I co-created, wanting to bring more simplicity and efficacy to our lives. Check out the end of the episode for a special code just for you, the Rendez-vous listeners. In a recent episode, I told you about my emotional journey with my weight and my body image and my relationship to food. And today, as promised, I wanted to talk to you about my health and what I actually eat, which is a question that I get asked so often and that usually I refrain from talking about because I think diets are very personal. Not two people can have the same one. And it's really a story of trials and errors to find what really works for us. I thought today I would start with a list of all the diets that I tried in my life and which ones worked for me and which ones were an absolute disaster. So I started dieting when I was about 14, 15. That's the moment when, as you might recall, my body started changing and I wanted to do everything I could to keep it the way it used to be when nobody was looking at me as a sexual creature. And I think I picked a few magazines and there were just ideas about how to restrict your food, and that's how I started. I think specifically the French L used to give every summer the diet of the season. And of course, I was trying to do it. And of course, I was succeeding for 3 days and then go back to my normal habits. When I was young, I never had a lot of weight to lose. I think it was more an idea of not accepting myself, of wanting to go back to the magic world of childhood and not accepting becoming a woman and the curves that come with it. I think it was also being extremely sensitive to all the imagery around me. I've always been a fashion lover, as you know, and a magazine lover. And of course, it had a huge influence on me. And then it was, I think, definitely a relationship that I had with food. I explained how cake was my self-soothing habit and how I was told that it was bad, which taught me very early to have a sort of punitive relationship with my appetite and my hunger. Before I go any further, I think I should talk about that. I'm a hungry person. I've always been hungry. I love food. I love food. I love drinking, I love eating, I love salty food, I love sweet food. I was born in a world of food. Everybody around me was cooking. My grandma was a chef, my father was a chef. I come from France, the culture around food is incredible. And then there is my physiology. I'm somebody that's anxious. I'm the type of people whose quietness can hide a lot of anxiety. I have a tendency to hide my emotions when I'm stressed. That's something that I do much less now. I can say, okay, I'm very anxious, I need to take a break. But I used to be completely unable to manage my emotions, and so I would regulate them with food. That's something that I still do today. And if I get anxious, if I have a phone call, if I have bad news, I will have something in my mouth before I even thought about it. When that happens and that you find yourself with a piece of bread in your mouth before you've even been able to decide that you are going to do that, it's actually sort of your lizard brain that's taken over. It's not that you're crazy. It's that this lapse of judgment is actually your survival system taking over. You're not thinking. You're just providing for yourself what you need. And in that moment, if food is your calming drug of choice, that's what you're going to go for. I try to stay away from talking about food as an addiction. I actually think that it's very natural to be looking for food when you're stressed, when you have an excess of emotions, And I don't think we should stay away from that. I think food can be a very healthy, very natural way to soothe oneself. And I think accepting that is the beginning of the self-acceptance I was talking about in the first part of this series. But it's definitely something to be conscious of and to learn how to manage. Certainly, it is not something to berate ourselves about. Because of all of this, simple restriction diet never really worked for me. When I was young, I was constantly hungry, I was constantly nervous, I was constantly reaching out for food, and anything that felt too controlled was just throwing me off completely. And usually these kind of things were putting me deeper into a cycle of self-questioning, of berating myself for my bad habits, and it would make me even more hungry and reaching out for food. I tried everything at that time, but it was never really with a sense of despair. I think until I was in my mid-30s, I thought that I had weight issues, but now that I look back, and a lot of women my age will tell you, I look back and I'm like, you were really crazy, because my weight would actually not fluctuate that much. And I think that's what people refer to when they urge others to just not share their weight problems when they obviously don't really have one. And in some ways, I agree. And in other ways, I think it leaves a lot of us women in the middle, women who have weight issues, but that are never really dangerous for their health or close to obesity. And in some way, we're being silenced. And I understand why, but at the same time, sometimes I feel like it leaves us alone with a problem that's actually really present, whether it's in our head or really with our health and our self-image. Because restriction never worked, and I had a tendency to love the idea of magical solution and magical thinking, I started when I was in my mid-30s, and when actually keeping my weight under control started becoming a more serious issue, and I'll talk to you about my health very soon, I started trying intuitive eating, and I talked a little bit about it in the first part, so I won't stay too long on that. But what it taught me, because it was so difficult for me, intuitive eating is basically where you are supposed to get really in touch with your appetite, to be able to be in front of a cake and tell yourself, am I really hungry? Am I feeling my body? Or am I feeling my emotional needs? And to be able to make the difference between one or the other. And I'm just gonna say, I've never been able to do that. My hunger is really strong and I can't question it right when it's here. And to me, anything intuitive, I think there are other words for this type of diet, were such mindfucks, because actually I would spend my whole day wondering if my appetite was emotional or physical, and it would put me into even more of an obsessive relationship with food and with my body. I was looking for liberation, and these type of diets were promising to me liberation, but what it actually brought was more self-obsession, because the questions that they were asking me to ask myself were questions that I could never really answer. My emotions and my appetite are way too linked. I can't separate them. And I have a very impulsive relationship with food, and intellectualizing it, even though I know it's supposed to be your intuition. As I said before, my intuition tells me, eat more, you'll feel better. And I've questioned it many times, but I've never been able to fix that. Of course, not everybody is the same. I live with a man that exercises every day, that's pretty health conscious, even though like me, he loves to eat and he's always hungry. But when he's training for a movie, he's very, very good at following a very strict diet. I've always hated them, and I think I've seen nutritionists 2 or 3 times in my life. And each time when they would produce this piece of paper in front of me telling me to eat 150 grams of roasted chicken for lunch with 7 leaves of spinach, I wouldn't be able to last even one day. I have never ever been able to do this type of really restrictive diets, but I know it works for others because I've seen Graham do it and actually really enjoy it. He says that he loves doing that it gives him a sort of freedom and a sense of control that he loves. And I get it, but I was never, never able to do that. And so that's the funny thing with diets. To me, if I had to choose what works the best, it is something that, if possible, frees my mind the most and doesn't fill it with endless questions like intuitive eating was doing. Of course, a few years ago, some new trends in diets came about. There was keto, paleo, and even fasting that came forward pretty strongly. And I tried these types of diets, and for the first time in my life, I felt a change. And that's when I think I should switch for a second and talk to you about my health. Because really, our body and our minds are so linked, and you can't talk about all of this through just the prism of discipline or of self-image or how you want to look in your jeans. I think running the show from the background is our health. I'm going to start to tell you about my years in New York City. I had been, as you know, projected there after having a successful blog, and I arrived there and I had a very intense, crazy life. I was traveling a lot and I had never had any health issues, and I saw myself as a very strong, very sturdy, very resistant type of person. I was emotionally very fragile at that time. I didn't know really what was happening to me. I was far away from everything I knew. And I started self-soothing with food more than I ever had. Of course, it coincided with moving to New York and having access to a lot of different types of food, getting acquainted with coffee shops and all the delicious cakes that you find there with giant lattes and with all those things. And the fact that in New York, you eat at restaurants a lot. And very soon, I started feeling and looking different. And it took me years to understand what was happening. It looked like I had a certain sense of swelling. My face started to get more round. I was piling on the pounds. And instead of thinking, oh, something is going on, of course, the first thing I did was blaming myself and telling myself that I was eating and drinking too much. And that's one of the things I think is so important to look at before we do what we've been taught to do and blame ourselves and telling ourselves we are out of control and we eat too much and all that, is to look at the underlying reasons why all of this is happening. Is it because we're too stressed? Is it because we're compensating because our life is too stressful? Are we masking a burnout? What is really going on? In my case, it took me so long to understand that I was dealing, probably, with metabolic syndrome. In my family, there are so many cases of diabetes. I think past a certain age, it's more common on both sides of my family for people to have diabetes than not to have it. Most of the people in my family are not overweight. And that's something that I think is important to know, is that you don't need to be obese to develop diabetes. My mom declared it when she was about 50. My grandma had it. My father's had it for 10 years. And he's a very healthy guy. He exercises. But it's something that I think we have a sensitivity to. And I also think that people from the south of France and from the north of Africa, where my family comes from, have a tendency to eat a diet that is very high in carbohydrates. My father has an Italian heritage, so it's a lot of pasta, a lot of bread. And my grandmother came from Morocco, and there is a lot of sugar, whether it's in the tea that she used to prepare every day, in the sweets that are very present, and also lots of bread, lots of carbs, lots of couscous, lots of grains, all these kind of things. And as you know, diabetes is a disease that's very related to sugar, and I'm not going to go into the details of how it works here, because That's not what you're expecting from me, and I would be the worst doctor in the entire universe. But definitely there was something happening there. And I don't have diabetes, but I think that during my New York years, I had possibly a pre-diabetes, at least metabolic syndrome, which I finally understood years later when I started reading books about that. How it would manifest was obviously an incredible taste for anything sugar. But the main thing that was happening was that I couldn't go a day without sugar crashes. And it sounds funny when you joke about it with your friends, but the truth is at my studio in New York, there was literally a couch where my team were used to seeing me have a nap in the middle of the day. That was still a time when I was eating the typical French breakfast, which is bread, butter, and jam, and probably have a carb for lunch, like maybe a pasta. I remember at that time I wasn't eating a lot of meat, and that my snack during the afternoon would probably be a muffin or a cookie or things like that. And that would keep going into the evening, when then I would have a drink. And basically my whole day was sugar loading without even realizing. And reassuring myself that it was perfectly healthy, that pasta was good, that bread was, you know, the French staple, and all of these things, that literally my beliefs and my culture around food were so strong that it took me years, years to change them. It started becoming concerning when I couldn't go through an afternoon without absolute crashing. My team knew that at some point, if we had a meeting that was too long, I would crash and I wouldn't be able to have any ideas. It's almost like my brain would shut off. And so it wasn't just a physical sensation of having to fall asleep. It was also that my brain was in complete fog and I couldn't focus and I couldn't function anymore. When I was doing days of shooting, when I was a photographer, it was even worse. I had to keep loading on sugar during the whole day to be able to keep with the day going. Those days to me were extremely stressful. There were a lot of people around me, a lot of pressure to get the photo, days that would go without a break. And my body would naturally guide me towards the first source of energy when I was missing it. And that was always, always sugar. I ignored this for many years because, as I told you earlier, my weight was never concerning. And I couldn't imagine having diabetes or anything resembling that unless you were overweight. And so I never really questioned that. And I was so young and so ignorant at that time. So I never really realized what my body was going through, trying to take me through all these years, trying to keep me at a normal level of energy. I could feel that I had little issues. I could feel that things were not in full balance. I was having skin inflammation. My appetite was out of control. I had sugar crashes, and I started developing insane bouts of anxiety. Of course, I was having a ton of coffee at any time of the day to keep me going, and I was literally running my body through the ground. When I look back now, I feel pain for what I was doing to myself. And then I started having trouble with my fertility and seeing a ton of doctors. And in some ways, that's the thing that put me onto a path towards real health. I remember seeing a professor and doing a lot of blood tests to try to determine what was going on in my body. And when they came back, he told me, "Your inflammation markers are super high. We need to calm down inflammation." And he told me to stop gluten, which was very hard for me. And then he decided to put me on steroids to calm the inflammation, which I didn't even know what it was at that time. And I was still very obedient with every doctor. And so I took those steroids and they made me completely crazy. And after that, I moved to LA and that's when I kind of crashed. Slowly, as I was learning more about my body, I was able to recognize the signs of why I was feeling the way I was feeling. I started to understand that my appetite for sugar was not just something that I was born with, but that it was dictated by the sugar crashes that I was constantly creating in my body. For any of you who've had that problem, you probably know this incredible hunger that will drive you to eat absolutely anything on your way. As I said, it's not something you can think about. It's not something you can intellectualize or tell yourself, no, you've had food, you can eat later. It's a wild thing that takes you and you feel like an animal just like jumping on any food. And so I started looking at that and slowly experimenting with lowering my carb intake. And that literally changed my life. When I started experimenting with a very low level type of keto diet, meaning just simply a low carb diet, much less bread, much less pasta, much less of all of these, and mostly green vegetables and a ton of protein, making protein one of the most important parts of my diet when it was almost non-existent before, it's almost like I had found the key to controlling my appetite. It changed so many things and I felt completely different. I wasn't as exhausted. I didn't have these crashes in the middle of the day. I felt fresh and awake during the whole day. And it was an absolute revolution for me. And it still is to this day because that's the way that I try to eat. I also knew that if there weren't markers of diabetes in my blood yet, it was either I was going to do this low-carb diet type of thing, or I was going to declare diabetes in a few years. I could feel it in my body. I could see it on my face when I had flare-ups, and I could just look at my temperament, my taste for sugar, and at my family. And if there is one thing I know, it's that even though many millions of people have diabetes and that there is medicine to help, it is an actually pretty dramatic condition and very, very difficult to manage. And that if you can, you have to try to avoid it at any cost. So once I had established what was a better diet for me, meaning a low-carb diet that would regulate not only my levels of energy, my levels of sugar, but also my appetite, which was the thing that I had always struggled with, things started being a little easier. But this is at that time also that I turned 40, 41, 42, 43, and that, as a lot of you know, even if you have a good diet, the weight just sneaks on you. Even if now I knew what to eat, it was really difficult for me. I'm gonna repeat myself, but I love eating and drinking and going to the restaurant and all these things. And it's not that it's extremely difficult to keep a low-carb diet when you go out and when you love life and all that, but it's a little challenge every day. And I've never been good with discipline. So I kept having the trouble regulating my weight as I was getting older. It was becoming more complicated. And I started going to places with my weight where I'd never been before. My usual, I'm just going to say number, just indicative, because numbers don't really mean anything. But throughout my life, I'd always been around 60 to 63 kilos. And when I was talking about gaining weight, it was maybe 65, 66. That was always the maximum. And now, after 40, if I was going on vacation, losing a little bit track of my diet, letting myself eat cake again and bread and then drinking, I would easily go up to 70, 72. I think my maximum that I've been at is 74. And that was during the pandemic. It was very difficult. I really didn't recognize myself. And I don't know if you've ever felt that if you're around my age, that as you age, it's like your body becomes a precision machine. You do one thing and you pay for it the day after. Things that when you were young, you could be drunk for 3 nights in a row and your body wouldn't show any sign of it. Now you can feel anytime you do something good for your body, you get rewards an hour later, 3 days later, and you do something like eat too much sugar and you feel it right away. You see it on your face, you see it in your digestion, you see it in the way you can focus or not. In my case, I could see it in my period. There's so many signs and it's almost like it's better. Like I feel better because I can tell when I'm healthy and when my body's happy. It tells it to me right away. I don't know if it's because I've learned to communicate with it more, and I should definitely do an episode about communicating with your body, finding your intuition, all these kind of things. But I definitely have learned to read all the signs and my body is showing me right away. And I can tell you one thing, and it's that when I go over 70 kilo, everything goes crazy. My period gets crazy. My anxiety comes and flares up. My appetite gets completely dysregulated. And I start having my old hiding to eat type of reactions. The shame comes back up. So it's kind of a list of things that I've learned how to recognize. And now I'm like, okay, you need to do something because you're not feeling well. One of the other things that has marked my health journey and my fertility journey are my fibroids. There is a whole episode I could do about that, and I don't know if you're interested. Please tell me if you are, because my story is crazy with the fibroids. But one thing that I know is that fibroids, every woman in my family had them, and they're often associated with high estrogen, and high estrogen is often associated with metabolic syndrome and all the dysregulations that can come with excess sugar in your blood. Again, I'm not a doctor, but that's also why I think it's so important to talk about these things. Weight is not just about our image in the mirror, and I'm the first one to make that mistake. I obviously always talk about weight through the prism of my vanity. Of course, but in the background, the things that are happening to our bodies with even the smallest dysregulations in our weight, in the way we eat, are crazy. A friend recently told me that she lost a lot of weight through Ozempic. Remember I did an episode about that? And as you know, I'm not sure what I think about this drug, and that's not something that I want to do. But she told me that by losing weight, her endometriosis went down big time, and that might help her get pregnant. And of course, it's just one example, and people who are overweight get pregnant all the time. But I just think it's very important to notice that women's health is, and I'm sure men's health as well, is very, very linked to the type of diet they're eating. So I knew what to eat, and I had started understanding my body better. But it is still difficult for me to keep all of this under control. And so slowly I had to find tools to help me. And I have two main tools in my toolbox. Well, three. Number one is it's very easy for me. If I go low carb, my body feels happy, I sleep better, I am less nervous, I am less hungry, and the kilos drop pretty easily. So that would be the number one tool. The second tool, and I'll be criticized for that, but I want to be very honest with you. The second tool is my scale. And the reason why it is my scale is because I have the type of body that doesn't really show weight gain. I have these type of morphologies where the weight gets hidden on your back, inside your belly. And that is actually called visceral fat. And visceral fat is, as you probably know, one of the most dangerous fat you can carry because it covers your arteries, your heart, all your vital organs. And it is the type of fat that can give you heart attacks and things like that. So again, we come back to the idea of health and how weight can impact your health. It's also the type of weight that really hides itself really well. And that when you say, oh, I've gained weight, I feel terrible, people will say, what? But your legs look amazing. You haven't gained weight. And you're like, no, but I can't put my jacket on because it doesn't fit anymore. I think it's called apple shape, what somebody in my team used to say, oh, I'm top heavy. And it's easy to hide, but it also creeps on you. And to me, that's why I need to have a scale, because I could literally put on 20 pounds without really seeing it and with nobody telling me anything. So scale is an important tool. And I know that when I stop weighing myself, it means that I'm in trouble. It means that I'm in denial and that it's time to get back to my third tool. And my third tool is also a very controversial, very hot topic type of tool. And I don't care. I'm doing it. And it's counting my calories. So it's just this little app. It's called Lose It. A few of my friends have it, actually. And you enter your food and it gives you the number of calories. And you set yourself with a budget. And then you fill that budget with whatever you like. And that is why people usually criticize calorie counting, is because they say, oh, well, you could eat whatever, you could eat sugar all day. Counting calories doesn't help you to eat. It doesn't, and I completely agree. But if you know what to eat, which by now I kind of know what to eat, calorie counting is here to help you with knowing how much sugar you want to have every day, with knowing when you've had enough, knowing, for example, how much steak you should eat. And to me, it's been very helpful and actually not at all traumatic, not at all putting me into a weird relationship with myself. I find it pretty fun, actually a little bit like a game. And I feel like it's a healthy tool of keeping things under control. And gosh, I have so much to say on that subject. But we often present this idea of control as something that's really bad and that we should beware of it because wanting to be in control of everything is bad for you and you become obsessive and all that. But in my experience, having a little sense that you're controlling what you eat is actually where I feel best. When I know where I am, I know that I've had a week when I've kept my calories under control, where I weigh myself and I feel like, okay, I'm at a good weight, I'm within the range that I like, I get a lot of peace of mind from that. And if you remember what I was talking about when I was talking about all the diets that I had done, to me, that's the most important. Do the tools that you use provide you with peace of mind? Do they free your brain from too much questioning? And do they help you keep a healthy, simple relationship with your body? And that, to me, is what my scale does, for example, because I don't have to second guess myself. And it's the same thing with the calorie counter. And so to finish, I'll tell you what a, let's say, a healthy day for me looks like. I weirdly have lost appetite in the morning. I don't do necessarily fasting, but I do eat a bit later. I have an oatmeal latte, which is supposedly really bad for your health and sugar levels, but it actually really fills me until 12, where I'll have a protein, usually it's eggs, a protein type of bread, and some sort of green salad or vegetable. I'll always have a little piece of really dark chocolate, the 85% green and blacks. And depending if I'm hungry in the afternoon and if that's a day where I'm being really good, I'll have some ham, something that's a protein. And it can be some Greek yogurt with some almond butter, a tiny bit of jam. I'm not completely staying away from sugar. As you've probably understood, I love all the pleasures of life, but I've just lowered it massively. In the evening, again, and that's kind of an ideal nutritional day. Usually I've bought this steamer and I just throw everything in the steamer and I'll have steamed veggies with some fish and again, maybe a few squares of chocolate. Usually if I've had that, I have a few hundred calories left and I'll use them during the day to have something that I like and that's off program and that keeps me kind of entertained food-wise. And that really works. And when I'm trying to be really careful, if I know that I have a restaurant in the evening, I'll just restrict a little bit more what I'm eating during the day. And now that my appetite is more regulated, it's something that I can do very easily. Just tell myself, oh, I'll have a very light lunch because tonight I'll have a more heavy dinner. I wanted to share that because I had promised to say a little bit about what I'm eating in a day, but truly I think it's really boring. It's such a personal thing. What I wanted today is sharing the path of somebody that's really normal, that loves foods, that never has been able to be completely gluten-free, completely sugar-free, that has never done crazy diets. Somebody that's so, so far away from all the health gurus that you see out there, and that is slowly, very slowly trying to find her way to her own optimal diet. And nothing that I do is something that I recommend specifically. It's just something that works for me. And I constantly fluctuate. I constantly gain 1, 2, 3 kilos and remind myself to get back on my healthy diet. I constantly have days where I eat so much sugar that I cannot believe what I've done. And those can last for weeks. And then I just have to get back to myself and to what I know works for me. I've accepted that this is my reality. There's always this contradiction and this kind of fight between my nature, which is imprinted inside me from generation of sugar-loving people, and what I know today to be good. And it's always that thing, right? When we talk about moderation, it's not the idea of being perfect every day. It's the knowledge that you're going to sway from your path over and over and over again, but that the home base that you've created for yourself is always a great place to come back to, that it works, that it's comfortable, that it makes you happy, and that you always have it ready to welcome you and to bring you back to your sense of health. I hope today's episode answered some of your questions. I have so much to say about that subject as it is something that I've been thinking about for all of my life. But let me know if there are things that I left to the side. If you want to know a little bit more, we have time. We can talk about all of these things. In the meantime, I hope you have a great week and I'm sending you love. Le rendezvous is brought to you by Doré. Doré's latest launch, La Micellaire, is a botanical micellar cleansing water that doesn't require rinsing. Minimize bathroom time and maximize outdoor time with our super simple routine. Use code PODCAST10 for 10% off your first order. Thank you for listening to Le Rendez-vous. If you want to know more about me, find out about my newsletter and my community. Find me on Instagram at Garance Doré or at my website at garance.world. And well, if you'd like to find out how to spell that crazy name, just check out the show notes. Until next time, sending you love.